highlights the importance of the Council of Churches adopting a holistic approach to dealing with disability is reflected in the kind of proposals that we have highlighted in the Integrated National Development Strategy, the Taylor Committee report. And while the Department of Social Development may think it is one part of the broader spectrum of dealing with an intergovernmental panel, I think the importance of adopting a holistic definition is of significance and importance because disability is a condition that's fluid and not certainly in terms of the World Health Organization's identification, a category with sharp, distinctive characteristics necessarily. So, in terms of assessment, model that is being proposed, that the social model that's being proposed, is not saying is that the medical model is of unimportance, but the medical model needs to be dealt with in a holistic fashion, and those include taking cognizance of the needs of the person who applies for or has need for a disability grant. How can that be harmonized within all? So I've spoken about transport, the need for transport, social development, and health. But a fundamentally important part of this is the Department of Finance and Economic Development, which make decisions of what kind of portion of the pie you are able to get distribute towards social assistance at the end of the day. And we want to link that to the Council of Churches because the stigma that's attached to poverty is very often people are poor because they are poor because they choose to be poor because they do not want to pull themselves up by the bootstraps. It's a faith argument that has economic implications. People are poor because, and people are disabled because of the kind of society that they live in and because of the nature and characteristics generated by the choices of society. And very often, the choices of society by the politicians and the legislative level determine what kind of quality of assistance can or cannot be given. So for argument's sake, if you're stuck with 3.4% of the GDP to social assistance, there's so much you can do and so much you can deal with. But that needs to be challenged, and you have the opportunity to do that now through the Money Bills Amendment-related Act to even challenge the kind of macroeconomic proportional expenditure. So it's important that you have these this discussion within the broad framework of the intergovernmental responses, no less the finance, so that it does not, at the end of the day, become an issue of economics, because we have so much. Therefore, we need to dumb down the definition. And I'm not saying that's why you're doing that, but there's a large data that could be interpreted in terms of that. But I think you have a responsibility to the marginalized and vulnerable people not to to create a definition that excludes them or excludes further conditions rather than includes them. And that's the beauty of the basic income grant from the Taylor Committee report. And I think I would want to go towards the question rather than answering in terms of how the Social Development Department arranges its definition and decisions on disability grants. Why up till now, in the second decade of our democracy, are we still seeing questions around or the lack of implementation or the lack of recognition of a basic income grant or of the Integrated National Development Strategy? Those are not questions that I expect you to be able to answer, but that the constituency that I represent would need answers, because in principle they have accepted government's response of dealing with poverty, chronic poverty and disability way back in 2001. And the only reason that parliamentary office can give them is to say is that, well, these are the answers that social development is able to provide us with. So we would expect that there's some engagement between yourself and Cabinet and the other departments in terms of those answers. finally, I think we're saying is that not a promotion of a disability grant so that somebody could find a way out of doing his job. And I know that's anecdotal. I don't know if that is a real experience that is coming forward. I have a real experience which is quite different here that if we had time we could speak to, but in essence of somebody who has lost a very professional job and an income because of the occupational injury that she has suffered, and has been unable to provide for her income because there is no way that she's able to supplement that income that's lost in her job because of an injury and disability that was incurred. I'm just simply posing that there is another question we could ask about the access. And I think is that there's probably more questions being asked about seriously people who have lost their work or about to lose their work, asking questions in terms of how do I supplement this income. I think we need to be very clear, and I think we want to say is that government has done an astounding job through social development in increasing the social transfers from 1994. I think that is acknowledged. The churches acknowledge that. I think that we also acknowledge that the situation is still more dire than we expected it to be, one, because of the economic crisis, and two, perhaps because of unintended consequences, that the level of growth has not been able to deal with the kind of poverty and inequality that we still have in today. And those are studies that I don't need to bring to your attention and explain to you. But I think at the end of the day, we're not saying is that I think the stories that we hear are not about stories of people who are saying is that because of a disability, I would rather go for a grant than continue my job. I think people are asking seriously, how do we find jobs in this current context of poverty? How do I either hold on to my job or how do I find some kind of sustainable livelihood? And I think we are saying is that given the serious nature of those claiming the rise of chronic illnesses, the rise of disability that has risen, and this should be an indicator of the seriousness of the situation, and it should really be that context that we deal with in terms of chronic poverty, disability, to define disability in a holistic sense, rather than just focus on one particular model. And therefore, our plea would be that the assessment be, and that HAT take on more than a medical model, that HAT take on a comprehensive, holistic model, determining the needs of people. And that's where we've spoken of an intersubjectivity, rather than an objective model, which aims to exclude and provide within the bracket of some predetermined formula and predetermined amounts. What are the needs that the person who is disabled needs to be met to contribute towards the household, family, of which you are part of, and the broader community? I thank you, madam.
Any of your other colleagues like to add anything? Covered. Thank you very much, Reverend Premier, for your colleagues, Ms. Langenhoff and Jumat, for your contribution, your submission to this committee on the bill. We're now going to call on the next stakeholder with the Disability Action Research Team DART, Ms. Sue Fulpot. Oh, is there someone else that's representing? Okay, the organization. Okay, I'm sorry. Just before we give over to you, Honourable Member Tweta just has a question for the South African Council of Churches. Could we just give an opportunity, please? Do you Repeat the question. You know, okay.
Thank you, Chair. The observation by the Honourable Member Tshwete is correct. And we have had a discussion yesterday with Dr. Marite on the implication of the definition of this disability as it appears in Section 1 and its relationship to Section 7 dealing with care dependency. We also have had an opportunity during the short break to confer with some of my colleagues and also the parliamentary legal advisor on its implications. We've agreed, and I've been informed also by some of my colleagues from the policy, that the intention is to have two different tools to determine disability for adults, and then have a different tool to determine disability and the need of permanent care or support for children. So we'll have different tools. But what we also intend doing is to insert a definition dealing specifically with care dependency and disability related to such children. I hope my response does clarify your concern, Madam. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think that's fine because the fit for work issue will obviously not be applicable to children in terms of the African law. You covered on the women's Twitter?
Very much so, Chair. As long as we are going to review this, and my worry is that we still have more submissions, so it might come up so that you've given us, you've equipped us, so that if that this question comes, we'll know that this definition of care dependency will be looked at. Thank you so much.
Chair, I thought we would have an opportunity at one stage, once all the public submissions have been made, in which we would then make our response to some of the questions posed and also indicate what is it that we came across within the amendment bill currently that we thought this committee should also take into account as part of the additional or consequential amendments. Thank you, Chair.
No, definitely. As I said this morning, that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. The hearing is just the start of it. Honourable Mr. Reverend, there's such a lot of titles here this morning. Spoke to master students about thank you very much, Reverend Van Heerden, and your colleagues for your submission to this committee. Much appreciated. Dot. And I want to thank the Disability Action Research Team for their patience for waiting and trading place with the SSCC this morning. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. Good morning, honourable members. My name is Lizette Berry from the Children's Institute at the University of Cape Town. And I'm doing this presentation on behalf of SUFOPOT of the Disability Action Research Team, as well as Muzilisi Ntoni from the Disabled People South Africa. May I also at this point just mention that I've been asked to do this presentation at short notice, so please do forgive me if I seem slightly unprepared. If I may just introduce the two organizations on whose behalf I'm speaking this morning. The Disability Action Research Team has many years of experience of research in the disability sector, including being part of discussions around the International Classification of Functioning Disability and Health, or the ICF, which was developed by the World Health Organization in 2001. DART has also been involved in research on childhood disability and the assessment of eligibility for social assistance for both adults and children with disability. The Disabled People South Africa is a democratic cross-disability body made up of member organizations of disabled people in South Africa. DPSA is recognized as the National Assembly of Disabled People by Disabled People International, which has observer status in the UN. DPSA is also a part of the South African Disability Alliance. Leadership and staff of DPSA strongly uphold the principles of self-representation, integration, equality, cross-disability advocacy, and diversity. The mission of the organization is to be an effective and efficient democratic national assembly of all disabled persons, which mobilizes us to advocate for our rights, for the attainment of equal opportunity in an integrated social, political, and economic environment. The principle of self-representation is underpinned by the slogan of DPSA, "Nothing about us without us." I will now refer to specific sections of the bill which we have made comments on. Section 1 of the bill, which is the definition of disability, and I will just read the first section of the definition. Disability in respect of an applicant means a moderate to severe limitation to his or her ability to function as a result of a physical, sensory, communication, intellectual, or mental disability. It is our recommendation that the term impairment, as used in the definition, be replaced with the term, it is our recommendation that the term impairment be used instead of the term disability in the first clause here, such that it reads as follows: disability in respect of an applicant means a moderate to severe limitation to his or her ability to function as a result of a physical, sensory, communication, intellectual, or mental impairment. Impairment here is drawing on the ICF, which we regard as embodying the social model of disability. And the ICF defines impairment as a loss or abnormality in body structure or physiological function. Our starting point is really that the term disability represents the complex interaction between persons with impairments and the environment. There may be many factors that prevent a person from providing for their own maintenance or being gainfully employed, which has nothing to do with his or her impairment or functional limitations, such as inaccessible work environments or transport systems and discriminatory attitudes. It is therefore critical that interventions focus primarily on environmental factors that perpetuate the exclusion and marginalization of disabled persons, and not only on individual limitations. That disability is a product of disabling environments and not a quality inherent in a person suggests that use of this term is not appropriate in the context of the above clause. With regards to Section 7, which covers the care dependency grant and eligibility criteria, we support the removal of the terms physical or mental in the amendment bill. This is seen to be extremely positive, as there has long been exclusion of children with particular impairments, such as children with hearing loss, from access to social assistance. Currently, many health professionals who conduct the care dependency grant assessments are uncertain about the eligibility criteria for awarding the grant. The removal of these terms confirm and support that a child with any confirmed health condition or impairment must be considered for the grant on the basis of the need for permanent care or support services. We therefore recommend that a definition of disability or of care dependency for children must ensure that a child with any health condition is given the opportunity to be assessed. We also recommend that the terms permanent care and support services are clearly defined, as these are key terms influencing a child's assessment for eligibility. With regards to Section 9, which speaks to the eligibility criteria for the disability grant, again, removal of the terms physical or mental in this clause of the bill is welcomed, so that people with a range of impairment types can be considered for social assistance. In general, we are concerned regarding Section 7, which indicates that a person is eligible for a care dependency grant if they are the parent, primary caregiver, or foster parent of a child who, due to their disability, requires permanent care or support services. Similarly, in Section 7, a person is eligible for a disability grant if they have a disability. Currently, the definition in Section 1 is not appropriate for children in terms of its implications for self-maintenance and gainful employment. Due to children's ongoing developmental needs, it is necessary to adopt a needs-based approach when considering children's eligibility for the care dependency grant, and in particular to focus on their need for care that arises as a result of impairment. Given that disability is a key criterion for access to social assistance, it is critical that it be defined distinctly for children who have different needs to adults. In the context of the Social Assistance Act, the definition of disability only comes into its own with the assessment tools for the care dependency grant and the disability grant, because alone it can be interpreted in a range of ways. We therefore recommend that the definitions contained here provide the framework for the assessment tools for eligibility for the care dependency grant and disability grant. That is, requires permanent care or support services for the care dependency grant, unable to obtain the means to provide for own maintenance or to be gainfully employed for the disability grant. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I just want to tell members that the chair has gone out to the ladies. She'll be back soon. Thank you very much for your presentation. But I'm sure Section 7, we've covered that. So are you satisfied with the... Because we are saying, as these members of Parliament, that we are going to review, the Department has promised that we are going to review Section 7, definition of care dependency.
Okay. Yes, I'm very happy with the proposal from the department to make sure that there's a specific definition for the care dependency grant.
Thank you very much. So that one is the from is the last paragraph.
Yes.
So you're covered.
I'm covered.
Covered. Let me check maybe members' questions to be asked. Thank you very much. Members, is there anything that you'd want to say or comment on? No, not. But I just want to check with the. You've mentioned the. Let me check if I'm not correct. You will correct me. The Section 1.
Yes.
Disability. Let me start reading. Disability in respect of an applicant means a moderate to severe limitation, but. You say intellectual or mental disability. We should put impairment.
Impairment. That's right. That is our recommendation, that the term impairment, yes, is replaced with, that the term impairment is used instead of disability within the definition.
Can I find out from the legal advisor if you could assist us with the impairment? Replaced instead of disability. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems like it doesn't make a substantial difference, because at the end the meaning seems to be the same. We only, and then I think we are only replacing disability with impairment in the body of the definition. But it seems like disability will still remain disability in terms of the actual definition. So in my view, it does not seem to make any substantial difference. It wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah, maybe we should find out from why do you say disability, impairment instead of disability? Do you have a reason to say that? So that we also become educated. Thank you.
Madam Chair, the reasoning for suggesting that change is that, firstly, the term disability doesn't align well if you're using the term disability to define what disability is. So in other words, you're saying the definition for disability, you're including the term disability in your definition of disability. So that doesn't quite align. So we would suggest that an alternative word is used there. And our suggestion for using the term impairment is because impairment refers to the loss of a bodily structure or bodily functioning, whereas disability is really about the interaction of a person who has lost a bodily function or has a functional limitation with his or her environment. So the term disability has a much more broader, much more complex connotation than the term impairment.
Yeah, I hear your explanation. I'll give you, Mam Komingo, but I want to say with noting, by making sure that we make advert so that people come for their submission, it doesn't mean their concerns are not going to be discussed later on. So we need to come up together and check what this, but what you're saying, I do believe that, I don't want to say you're right, I might be wrong, but we are still going to discuss this later on.
Thank you.
I see the doctor is there anything that you'd want to say? Legal advisor? I'll give you Mamukum and leave it now.
I
just want to be clear on impairment and disability before we even go deeper. Thank you.
Well, I think our initial view is that I've just conferred with my colleagues who seem not to have any problem with the...
Sorry, legal advisor. I see people are asking pages. I'm dealing with Section 1. Section 1 is on the bill. And then the first paragraph, disability, the presenter talked about we put impairment. So now I wanted to check the difference between impairment and disability. Are we together? Thank you. So now I'm getting, it's like you're going to say yes, miss. So I'm now going to give legal advisor to tell us exactly. Okay, let me, because I'm being harassed this side. Legal advisor, just wait. Can I start with you, Mama Kume, and Mama Ken, honorable members, by the way. Sorry.
Okay, thanks, Chair. No, I'm a little bit confused, you know, the changing of names. Because if you remember well, some years ago, disability was changed to physically challenged. And all of a sudden, when we were saying physically challenged, they said, no, we are disabled. So whenever one is giving clarity, it must be just clarity, straight, you know, because we'll be saying something else, and again, the people whom we say they are disabled, or we'll be saying now they are impaired, yesterday they were physically challenged. So, thank you.
Honorable Kenny,
I also share the same sentiment. But I don't know whether we say we are going to add this name. I don't know. We are going to use both. Because the name impairment goes a long way, because even the renal, in the disease of the kidneys, there's also an impairment there. So So now, using this name can make confusion, won't it make any confusion pertaining to some other diseases which are also impaired, have this defect, this abnormality of impairment? Thank you.
Let me give to legal advisor, because, before I even make a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in my view, I still say it does not make a difference, because I think disability is still there. What we are defining disability, in the process of defining disability, we are using impairment, which means to the question that the comment that made by the Honourable Member is that we seem to now be saying it's no longer disability but an impairment, but it's going to still remain if we accept the use of impairment. Impairment will be in the body of the definition, but disability will still remain. We will still say this person has got a disability, but you are saying it's a physical or a mental impairment which will constitute disability. I'm not sure that. So it will not, in my view, Chair, it will not make any difference. And I think that I also take the point around that you may not necessarily have to use the same word to define. You can't use A to define A. So it may actually assist in trying to indicate that when you want to define disability, and if people do not understand what disability is, then you use another word to try and assist what it means when you say this disability. But if I say A means A, I may not be explaining correctly to you. But if I use another word, you may then understand, okay, if you say impairment, it means almost one of the same thing as disability.
Chair, members, you allow me to say, let us flag this and then see with other submissions. And at the same time, I am taking serious that members still feel that disability must remain. Therefore, I want to say we were still going to discuss this and then promise if we get more of submissions that are talking about, you know, this, we will see. But at the moment, what I'm getting from the legal advisor is that there is much difference between impairment and disability. So now I'm the servant of these members. The members feel that the disability must remain. So I still want to say let us flag it and then discuss it, because it doesn't mean that we're finished discussing this bill. We're still going to have several, you know, and reviewers that we do in the field. I see your hand, Honourable Kopane.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to the World Health Organization, like already people said, it clearly says that according to Health Organization, it defines disability as an umbrella term covering the impairment, activity, and limitation. And then they further say that the disability is a complex of phenomena, like she said, phenomena reflecting interaction between features of a body, features of a person's body, and features of society in which he or she lives. It further said that this definition, in essence, indicates the interaction of individuals with health conditions and contextualized factors, environment, and personal factors. But what is interesting is here where they say individual could present impairment, body, not necessarily experiencing any kind of disability. In other hands, a person could be experiencing a disability without having an impairment only by reason of a stigma or attitude that mark a paradigm shift from medical approach to a more social model approach. That's what they are saying.
So, members, I depend on you. Do we say disability must remain? Yes. I don't want to open discussions about this, really. Let us say the bill is not final. It's a draft, in an English word, draft bill. So it will be final once everything is done. So you still have a chance to come and listen when you finalize the bill.
If I may just correct a misunderstanding about our recommendation. Our recommendation is not to change the term disability as the term that is being defined in the Act. What our recommendation is saying that within the definition that is being proposed here, the word disability is being used to explain what disability is. And our recommendation is that within that definition, that the term impairment is used instead of disability, because it will bring much more clarity about what we are saying disability is.
The chair must come back and take your seat.
Nicola, I think maybe I would suggest that maybe the committee should not try and make a decision now. Find that you've had different views, and then maybe as to whether or not you want to accept impairment or disability, it's a matter that the committee will then on its own deliberate on.
Because I still want to make a research, even me. Yeah, let us say we will still look at it. Yes, let us not say yes or no now, because this is a draft. Yeah. Let me thank you. Are there any questions maybe before I summarize? Oh, Jean, are you here? Please come and take your seat.
It's actually nice to sit on the side of the house. But I've asked this even to the other organizations. When you look at the stakeholders that have been consulted, it's the Department of Health, and then several, there's a Disability Alliance, on the last page of the act of the draft bill, do you form part of that alliance? I think there's two broad organizations that represent people with disabilities.
Thank you, honourable member.
Sorry, do you have a copy of the bill?
I don't have one with me, but
yeah, we'll give it to you.
Okay.
Here's one. In the meantime, Chair, will you come and take your seat?
Sorry, Madam Chair, I think you were out of the room when I introduced myself earlier, but I'm representing two organizations who've made the submission, which is the Disability Action Research Team and Disabled People South Africa. And DPSA are members of the South African Disability Alliance. One comment that they did give to me to say to you this morning is that they did feel that there wasn't sufficient time to consult with their members, and that I think the content of the amendment bill isn't widely known by the disability sector and organizations working with disabled people. So there is a sense that there hasn't been sufficient time for consultation. Thank you.
If I look at the time, we've ran out of time for today, because this chamber needs to be used for the extended public sittings for the budget votes, the ETC. So thank you very much, first of all, to all our stakeholders today. The three stakeholders that came to make presentations. I'm sure all of your inputs have been noted, your concerns. The bills have a long way to go in terms of finalization. There's still a lot of work that the committee needs to do. So thank you very much also for the department for being here and providing clarity as per request. I'm sure they have also gained a lot of insight. And also to honourable members for your vigour and enthusiasm. Thank you. The meeting's adjourned.